You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
On this episode of Cheesehead Radio,
the Bears, well, they still suck.
But our wide receiver core is starting not to.
Meanwhile, several familiar faces take their first step, hopefully, to the Hall of Fame.
And we get ready for Rodgers versus Brady, Part 6.
4 quarters of Packers Talk.
Right here on
Cheesehead Radio.
Hello again, Cheesehead Nation. It is time for some Packers news, fun, and frivolity here on Cheesehead Radio, now in our 13th season. As usual, our esteemed hosts tonight are CeeDee Angeli of Packers Talk, known as Tundra Vision on Twitter, Kelly Hodgson of Cheesehead Radio, known as That Packer Girl on Twitter, and lastly, little old me, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. You can find me at Jersey Al GBP on Twitter. Our longtime friends at Ticket King are back as official sponsors of Cheesehead Radio and all of the Packers Talk podcast. Ticket King has been in business for more than 25 years in Wisconsin and has offices across the street from Lambeau Field and in Milwaukee. For all your Packers tickets needs, visit their website today at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. And that is it for the preliminaries. Let's get this show on the road.
Well, we were kind of hoping that this week was going to be a much more positive and light and happy episode of Cheesehead Radio than it was last week. And as it turns out, it is.
It's always great when we whomp the Bears.
Big win. Big, big win. How exciting. The Packers walloped the Bears, much as I think all of us predicted last week.
Walloped. Can you spell that?
No. But most of all, I think, like I said, wouldn't it be great if we played the Bears every week, all 17 weeks? It'd be a great time. Obviously, the Packers definitely had their number. But it was nice to see the Packers get better in a lot of areas, especially after their poor showing in probably all three phases of the game against the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm just going to take a little umbrage with the word wallop. You know, I mean, if they score on the goal line there, which some people think they do, they did, I didn't. But, you know, matter of inches, it's a one-score game. That's not a walloping. Yes, you know, they controlled most of the game, and maybe you felt a little comfortable for most of the game. But, you know, like actually I said in my predictions, it was a type of game where they keep a lesser team in it until later and then finally win, and that's kind of what happened. But
hold on a second.
Call it a wallop.
Wasn't it 27-10?
Yeah, What's that?
Yeah, I'm thinking final score was 27-10, right?
Yeah, but when they had the goal line thing, it would have put them within seven.
And that's however, this is what Bears Nation is absolutely still rending their garments over. But I want to point out that touchdown wasn't 18 points at the end of the day. Even if they would have scored, they still wouldn't have won. Packers did what they needed to do. They kind of went to the bend, don't break at the end, which kind of drove me nuts. But it was a much cleaner game. And ending with it, Jaire Alexander out of nowhere pick was just absolutely delicious.
Yeah, he's been due, right? He's overdue for one. So it's good to definitely see him get one.
And that was one of those, we're playing zone. No, we're not. I'm going to go.
Going back to your point, Al, because we meandered. Your point on the Bears staying in the game really was in many, many ways their own choice, because David Montgomery, their running back, was absolutely slashing our defense like a hot knife through butter pretty much almost every time he touched the ball. And then they just didn't give it to him.
Yeah.
I mean, they had one drive and it was just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be, you know, a terrible, terrible come from behind victory. And then they get down to the goal line.
And they fell on their own sword, you know?
They go in a shotgun and rush in Justin Fields. I said, why would you do that? You literally had this guy that we can't even stop until he reaches the safeties on every single play. So, you know, I agree with you, Al, in a slight way, that this game was much closer than it should have been or could have been, but it was the Bears' own fault that it wasn't.
Yeah, and besides just that on the micro level, if you look at the macro level in the entire game, you know, Montgomery tore them apart on their first drive when they scored a touchdown, and they spent the second and third quarter not giving him the ball.
Which is what, so right. Why?
So they I just kept sitting there saying, well, boy, this is really nice of them. I appreciate this. If they had been smart enough to keep doing what was working, we might have had a different story. So
yeah, it was definitely
on several levels, they shot themselves in the foot.
It was a head scratcher because they definitely had a good head of momentum heading into that second quarter, and they didn't use their strongest weapon. I was actually kind of surprised.
And conversely, the Packers did that. I mean, they started up the game and they were handing the ball off to A.J. Dillon. A.J. Dillon had an okay game, but he really was struggling, I think, to get the traction that he normally does against the Bears defense. Aaron Rodgers took a couple early sacks, and we were kind of thinking, oh boy, here we go. But then who shows up? Aaron Jones.
And he showed up, all right.
He showed up, and it would be very much like the Packers to give the ball to Aaron Jones, have him rush for like 50 yards on a drive, and then never give it to him again. And they did. They stuck with him, and they did what works. And that, I mean, this
game the amazing really thing.
really was on the back of Aaron Jones.
Yeah, I really like that. About 2/3 of the yards went to Jones. 1/3 went to Dillon, because they really did not give up on him, which I thought was very refreshing. Because like you said, there's like sometimes he's got some momentum, he's pounding down the field, and it's like, oh, let's put Dillon in just for reasons, which I never understand, because he's a professional. So he doesn't really need to take a huge break, but they stuck with him. He scores, and all is right in the universe with the offense, because now Rodgers has bought into the run game, which he did not last week.
For one game, says Mr. Skeptical.
Yes. But I think one of the most amazing things is, and I don't know why, I would love for somebody who's way smarter and has more time than me and is way more detail-oriented than me to understand how this seems to work over the years, whether it was Jones and Williams back, you know, in the day, and now between Jones and Dillon, for some reason, excuse me, there are just some opponents that Aaron Jones is just able to be the one back that generates all these yards. And then, like, there's another game and Aaron Jones just can't do it, but Dillon can. Do you ever notice that? That sometimes you keep thinking it's always going to be the one feature back, and yet it just seems to switch off depending on who or what kind of defense they're playing.
And honestly, I think that's why we have a 1A and a 1B, not a 1 and 2 running back as far as the depth chart goes, because each has different skills that play well against different teams. And I think, historically, Jones has done well against the Bears.
All right. So, the Chicago Bears have been touting all summer long how Justin Fields was going to be the next NFC North great quarterback, will finally unseat Aaron Rodgers. All this hype with Justin Fields. Of course, remember, he led the big comeback last week in probably one of the worst quarterback performances of a big comeback of all time. Did not have a great game. What did he complete? 7 passes the entire game?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah. Really didn't let him beat him with the legs. His arm wasn't all that great anyway. You know, the Chicago Bear fans are starting to turn on him already.
Which is unfortunate.
That's hard.
It's unfortunate. They shouldn't be turning on him. He's got a lot of skill. He's got a lot of potential. And he has that ability to, once when Rodgers retires, to be the premier quarterback in the NFC North, but not with his current offensive line. If you want to get critical about why he was not succeeding, his line was not protecting him.
Conversely, Aaron Rodgers looked like, when he was passing the ball, was settling in, definitely seemed to have more of a comfort zone with his veteran receivers. Didn't seem to be trying to force the ball as much to Tonyan. I think one of the things I love to see, like on the replays, is I'm actually watching his head move, like going through reads, which sometimes you don't necessarily see him do. He just kind of keeps looking to the right, maybe pretends to move the head a little bit, but he's really kind of watching Davante Adams the whole time. you could actually see on some of the plays, it was like, I'm looking there. Now I'm turning my head all the way to the middle of the field, I'm looking there.
Yeah.
Now I'm turning all the way to my head back to the right side, I'm looking there. I mean, you could tell he was going through his reads, and that really is where he's an exceptional quarterback, is when he can take the time to go through those quick reads and get the ball out.
Yeah, and having Elgton Jenkins back certainly went a long way towards solidifying that line, not just because he stepped in, but because Hansen ended up being the odd man out, and Newman moved into guard, where he's a much better player than he is out of tackle. So, I mean, you know, Jenkins was still a little rusty. He wasn't perfect, but still, I mean, LaFleur couldn't have praised him enough in the press conferences and what he meant to the line, solidifying the line and winning the game, even, he went as far to say. So that was a huge thing for the Packers there.
Yeah, Rodgers was much more patient and comfortable in the pocket. And even the team covering the game was pointing out he was going through his progressions, which he really wasn't doing last week. And it was not just forcing the ball to one person. You're absolutely right, guys. He didn't miss opportunities like he did last week because he didn't get tunnel vision like he did previously.
And, you know, Elgton Jenkins, PFF had him actually as one of their lower ranked, one of their worst performers on offense for the week. But that's okay, because I think it was the combination of just his presence, his veteran presence, and the establishment of the run game that made everyone better. So Elgton Jenkins being back, Aaron Jones actually getting the ball, all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers is able to go through some progressions, and, you know, Packers win going away at the end.
And while he didn't score, I really like that Rodgers trusted Sammy Watkins with that big bomb. You know, he's starting to not just go to Cobb when he's nervous. Lazard, it was great to see Lazard score, but he was really spreading it out Sunday. And it, when he does that, he's more successful.
Speaking of PFF, both Jair Alexander and Rasul Douglas among PFF's top-ranked defensive backs in Week 2 in the entire league. Really nice to see both those guys bouncing back. You know, Jair, I think we talked a little bit last week. He's, you know, got a little chip on his shoulder, I think, and came out and played a great game, great interception. He helped shut down. I mean, I suppose when Equanimeous St. Brown is maybe your number one receiver, it's not the hardest job in the world, but obviously did a great job against those Bears wide receivers.
Douglas particularly was just fantastic. I mean, that play he made on the was supposed to be a wide receiver screen where he sees it and races past the blocker and takes the receiver down for a loss before he can even get going. That's total him putting in the film study, knowing what's coming, and then not waiting, but just being super aggressive. And really, the Packers defense needs a little more of that, as people being super aggressive.
And as we finish up our first quarter here on Cheesehead Radio, that's the big thing we're not talking about this week. I mean, we talk about this every week, and
we're not talking about it.
What is it?
Gee, what haven't we talked about? It's kind of the 600-pound elephant in the room.
What's the third unit?
Yes. Could someone say it?
So however, I will point out.
Would it be? We're waiting for you to say it.
No. I'm trying to encourage conversation people.
I will point out, though, that Mason Crosby hit all of his kicks.
Quite nicely. And the snaps and everything were all looking good on the field goal and on the punts.
McConnell looked really good.
So that's good. Yep.
Couple very
there
nice
there shots. Wasn't a flag on every play.
No. Didn't see a bunch of holding on returns.
Or blocks.
The only blemish was Rodgers did kind of muff that one. Luckily he did it on the sideline, which saved him a little bit. But you could see the reason was he had room to run, and I think he got excited and he was looking downfield. Instead of just staying with the ball the whole time, he was kind of looking at where he was going to go, and that kind of caused it to muff him. But, you know, that's a lesson that the coaches, you know, that's something the coaches will point out, and it'll be a lesson learned for him for sure.
Well, it'll take us to the end of the first quarter. We'll definitely call that a win, a great win over the Bears. Second quarter, let's talk a little more, since we've been talking on the offense, let's talk a little more about a specialty unit on the offense, and that, of course, is the wide receivers. Last week against the Vikings, it was a bit of a poop show, as we like to say. Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, the two rookies looked like they wanted to be featured, looked like LaFleur wanted to get them in and involved. They both had some mishaps, some miscues. It just seemed to set a tone for the entire game where It seemed like Rodgers just said, I'm not going to throw to anyone besides Bob Tonyan and A.J. Dillon or people that I know and like, and everything just kind of unraveled. This week, much more evenly paced, much more of a hierarchy of veterans to rookies, which probably made him more comfortable. And, of course, the return of Alan Lazard.
Yeah, and Alan Lazard leading the list there with 55 snaps. So he played pretty much, well, I think there were 61 offensive snaps total. So he didn't miss many. I think he at one point he came up slightly limping and he went off for a little bit, and it's probably the only reason he missed any plays. But, yeah, like you said, Lazard and Watkins with the majority of the snaps. But, you know, nicely spread around, you know, for a team that supposedly, quote, unquote, doesn't have any wide receivers. We had Romeo Dobbs got 25 snaps, Christian Watson 22, and Cobb 20. So pretty good distribution there. Packers using five wide receivers, you know, and spreading it around pretty well. The only outlier is poor Amari Rodgers with one snap. But, hey, that's one more than last week. So he's working his way up.
And Aaron Rodgers was right. He returns kicks or something.
That's all he's got. So anyway, it's nice to see that they are spreading it around, which is what we hoped would be the case when – we saw Davante Adams leave the team. We all looked at the games they had played without Adams and what happened. And this was kind of similar to what happened back then. So let's hope that continues.
And I hope that the rookies get successful, because once they do, Rodgers will target them more frequently, just like he did a couple of years ago when it was Equanimeous St. Brown and MVS when they were rookies. Once Rodgers trusted them, suddenly the defenses didn't know who to cover, because right now, if I was a secondary, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to cover Lazard and probably Watkins and maybe Cobb, and the other guys are just decoys. The aerial game gets much more dangerous as the rookies start getting integrated into the offensive scheme, not just as run downfield and maybe I'll throw to them. They might end up becoming choice number one, choice number two, and then Rodgers becomes unpredictable, where he's often very painfully predictable.
Yeah, and I think you could sense that they were a little more comfortable this game than they were the first game. You know, I didn't notice any horribly wrongly run routes, no terrible mistakes on their part. So I think this was a good get comfortable and gain a little confidence game for them.
One thing I really note is that those five wide receivers either had two or three receptions on the day, so very evenly spread out. I think the running backs combined for four receptions total. Davis, I think, had a reception in there too. But the one that really stands out to me is Alan Lazard's line, which is he only had two receptions for only 13 yards on the day, did have the touchdown, but he's the one who had the most snaps. He had 55, but only two receptions. But don't you think that there is a big connection between Alan Lazard being on the field and that running game kicking into high gear, or maybe just more receptions? Other people, his presence and downfield blocking and just being a bowling ball out there as a wide receiver, as a lead blocker, he makes things happen offensively. And, you know, that's what I've always said about Alan Lazard. I don't know if I see him as a wide receiver one, per se. You know, he's not a Davante Adams, but he's the guy you want on the field, because he is just an engine that makes everything else run.
And that's why he's on the field for that many snaps.
Exactly. Even on for what you know are primarily running plays, because he's going to knock out a safety on the way.
Yeah, I mean, you can't underestimate the value of that, you know. And they did try Lazard a couple of other times. If you remember, they tried a pass down the sideline that would have been a touchdown, but the defensive back who was beat got back in time and knocked the ball away. That would have been a touchdown for Lazard as well. And I think there were one or two other times when they tried him, but they just didn't complete it. So, you know, it's a good workmanlike game for Lazard, and I think that's what the Packers expect from him.
And defenses don't know what to do. Do you block him, or do you defend him against the pass, or just think he's going to block? You know, he has these intangible qualities that may not necessarily end up with touchdowns, But look at last year when there was a call for anybody to help out on special teams. He was the one that stepped up and was a gunner. He has he can hit, which is great. So I don't know if he's going to be our leading scoring wide receiver, but he's going to make opportunities for other players, which I think is something I don't see the other receivers doing.
Okay. That'll take us to the end of the second quarter, the end of our first half. I think we'll definitely call that a win, the improvement for the wide receivers. So we are 2-0 heading to halftime. We're going to go in the locker room, so you enjoy this message from our sponsor.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field?
Yeah.
If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King.
Oh, yeah.
Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay.
Oh, yeah.
Just go to their website.
Do it.
TheTicketKing.com. Again, that's TheTicketKing.com.
All right, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio. CD Angeli with you here, along with Jersey Albracco and Kelly Hodgson. We're going to take this into the third quarter. And, you know, since we obsessed so much this summer about the Hall of Fame vote and, of course, Leroy Butler, we would be remiss if we did not discuss, apparently, because this is now what we do on this show, the nominees for the Hall of Fame class of 2023, and a couple of longtime Packers who have now made the initial round of, 173 people? Somewhere around. Mm-hmm. Who do we got here, Kelly?
So we have Donald Driver. Not a shocker. Not the receiver I would have thought would have been picked, but I'm not going to complain. We have Nick the Pick Collins, also from that 2011 Super Bowl victorious team. And then we have one that people are like, oh, I guess he was a Packer, but he was a Packer for a long time and he was an impact player, Ryan Longwell.
All right. So obviously Donald Driver is a very popular Green Bay Packer, is already in the Packer Hall of Fame. Obviously at a position where it feels sometimes like wide receivers are a dime a dozen. And of course, Sterling Sharp can't get in. What are we thinking? Does this guy have a chance?
Probably not this year.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
If Sterling Sharp isn't even going to get a nomination, I worry that.
Well, remember, Sterling Sharp would have to be a senior.
Yeah, he would have to be a senior. And I was wondering, was Longwell a senior? No, I think he's still within the current era.
Maybe he just makes it. Yeah,
I think within a year or two he'll be a senior consideration. Right. Looking at other receivers that are probably coming up for consideration, I think even though he does have a Super Bowl victory under his belt, I think it's gonna be hard for Driver to make the Hall of Fame.
Agree.
Donald Driver's Hall of Fame monitor statistic from ProFootballReference.com is a 45.35. The average score for a wide receiver getting into the Hall of Fame is a 104. He is well behind Sterling Sharp's score of a 72.25. And actually, that would put him in the, the lower stratosphere of players such as Mark Clayton, Billy White Shoes Johnson, Joey Galloway, a lot of other guys who are probably never going to make the Hall of Fame. But, that's how that goes. Ryan Longwell, on the other hand, had a very long career actually with both Packers and Vikings.
A long time.
Is only sitting with the Hall of Fame monitor score of 19.68.
So, but does any kicker ever score higher?
Morton Anderson, one of only two kickers in the Hall of Fame, had a 97.45.
Well, that's considerably higher.
Yes.
So not a chance. I'm sorry, Ryan.
And who is the other only kicker in the Hall of Fame?
Probably Jan Stenerud.
Jan Stenerud, yep. Former Packer, who had a 56 point.
Well, wait a minute. What about George Blanda?
George Blanda. I don't see him on the list. Well, maybe he did not go in as a kicker.
But he was also a kicker for many years. Anyway,
right. Yeah, but not
for that matter. So was Jerry Kramer, right? He kicked too.
Yeah, exactly. Now the guy that might come in here and maybe have a slight chance, but he kind of suffers from the same disease, I suppose, as many others like Sterling Sharp, who he had a shortened career. But of course, is our man Nick the Pick Collins.
Yeah, I mean, talent wise, he's certainly deserving, but. Same as Sterling Sharp.
Right. Finishes with a Hall of Fame monitor score of 30.28.
That seems artificially low, though. And maybe he's getting the hit because of his neck injury, because he was up until...
I think there's actually a penalty for a neck injury. I don't think
there has to. Well, no, I don't know.
I'm looking at the categories. Like, there's nothing for neck injury.
But it seems like it's artificially low for his abilities, because he really was an impact player. And again, had his career not been shortened prematurely, I think there would be no question he'd be going to the Hall of Fame.
Well, of course. But you can't let every player who has a shortened career just go in the Hall of Fame because you think they might have been better.
But I swear there's this unofficial, well, your career wasn't complete, so you get an incomplete, so you never make it in.
Yeah, no, it doesn't happen.
Well, if you swear, then it must be true.
So. Yes.
Oh, well, yeah, totally true.
The average
Hall of Fame. Seriously, though.
Okay. The average Hall of Fame defensive back score is an 89. Leroy Butler, Packer, who just went in, got in with an 86.5, so a little bit below the average for that. Obviously, Nick, the pick, at a 30.28, his score falls in the same stratosphere as Deion Grant. Remember him?
Oh, come on.
Okay, this part's going to get you. Are you ready? He is actually 0.4 points behind Terrell Buckley.
Stop.
Terrell Buckley actually has a better Hall of Fame monitor score than Nick Collins.
No, okay. Now we got a problem.
Now we get the how dare you moment of the.
Right, now we have a problem.
We do, but it's longevity. Terrell Buckley played from 1992, you guys probably know, till 2005.
And he was not good in any of those years.
But he's able to, you know. He's able to mark up some stats then. Nick Collins only played from 2005 to 2011. And if you remember, he wasn't really that good at all till around 2008.
Yeah, it took him a few years, yeah.
Yeah, so he really only had three, maybe four really solid seasons in his entire career. So it's a bummer for him. He's a great guy, a great player, a Packer legend. But none of our guys who are on this list look like they're going to be making.
And then there's a whole bunch of cast of others that at one time or another wore a Packers jersey. And two that come to mind, which I still don't think one of them has a chance, would be Andre the Bad Moon Risen. Impact player. People don't like him. I don't think he'll ever have a chance of making it in. And looking at this list, I think the only one that really truly has a chance and would be because of his abilities in Indianapolis would be Jeff Saturday.
Jeff Saturday actually has a Hall of Fame monitor score of 75. The average Hall of Fame center has a score of 103, but there's only one player with a higher score than him that is not already in the Hall of Fame, and his name is Marquise Pouncey, who only retired in 2020. So really, Jeff Saturday is a good place because there is one guy behind him, Mick Tinglehoff, who was in the Hall of Fame. Remember him? He has 72. So Saturday, definitely, you're right. I think if there's anyone on that list who's really got a chance to make it, it's probably going to be.
But he won't be remembered being a Packer. He'll remember being
he's only 1 year
old.
Mm-hmm.
Green Bay.
And not that great of a year, that, too.
Well, end of his career year, you know. Yeah. That's what it was.
But he was a stellar center when he was with Indy.
Yes.
Absolutely. He'll definitely go in as a Colt. I got a feeling if anyone's going to make it, it might be him. So good. All right. Anything else on the Hall of Fame?
No, I think we covered it.
Let's crush it. That's the end of the third quarter. I don't know if we'll call it a win, unless we're going to call Jeff Saturday a win, hopefully.
It's a push at best.
There we are. So 2-0-1 going into our fourth quarter. Very exciting matchup coming up this Sunday. We have Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers. Two very old legends now going head-to-head for the sixth time. Who is holding the advantage head-to-head there?
Are you talking about broken tablets or actually going up against
actually
each
the
other?
Record, yes.
It's got to be Brady.
It is. 4-1, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something. And of course, making a little bit of the meme headlines this week is that Tom Brady broke his tablet this past week in a moment of frustration against the Saints.
Again?
This would be the second time. Which, of course, draws comparisons this week to the very famous GIF that we see all the time of Aaron Rodgers looking at a tablet and tossing it frustratedly to the side.
And saying, F it.
Yep. So question would be, who did it better? Tom Brady apologizing for breaking his tablet, or Aaron Rodgers with his effort toss into the
side. Well, one has made a gif. The other just looks like a tantruming toddler. Because Brady tends to have a cow all the time. And he gets a pass because he's Tom Brady. You know, like Aaron Rodgers gets pissy. And they're like, oh, he's a diva. Let's just kind of crucify him in the court of social media. I think Rodgers was funny just because it is a gif. And it's a gif that's like almost a decade later. It was that Thanksgiving game in Detroit where he tossed it. And we all still pull it out when every time Packers are going bad, that gif gets used. Brady just seems tiresome. Things don't go his way. And he's like screaming and pouting on the sideline. And maybe it's just because I don't like Tom Brady. But yeah.
You don't like Tom Brady?
I don't like him. Did you know about this, Al?
I did not. I couldn't tell about this at all.
And apparently his wife doesn't like him either because they're spending time apart. But that's neither here nor there when it comes to football. I'm going to say Aaron just because it's a gif and it's funny. And I pull it out when the Packers are on the struggle bus.
That was a long answer.
It really was.
Yeah. I'll make mine short. I haven't seen the Brady one, so it's got to be Rodgers for me.
All right. Did anyone watch the special, the spring, summer, the match, the golf outing with Tom Brady teaming with Aaron Rodgers against Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen?
God, no.
I don't like golf, so I don't care. I don't either,
but I had to watch that for Aaron Rodgers. It was actually pretty cool.
Waste of a good walk.
Now, listening to those two trash talk, I mean, it was actually fun to watch, especially going into the two young bucks there. They were pretty bewildered, and they really got into their heads at the end. I mean, Rodgers and Brady won, of course, but I mean, poor Josh Allen just kind of fell apart at the end. They just really
trash talks as well as my kids, my friend's 8-year-old kid. I happened to show him the video, that ad with Cam Newton and that little kid. He actually went up to another kid this weekend during practice and said, and that is how your mom became my biggest fan.
Okay.
I'm not sure I followed the meaning of that or the reason for that.
It was a small little light that flashed in her brain for a moment.
Watch Cam Newton. I'm just saying, I know a 9-year-old who can trash talk better than any grown-up.
Yep.
It has everything to do with Brady and Rodgers playing the match. I get it.
If they're going to trash talk, they don't hold a candle to this dude.
Okay.
All right, so, moving on.
Yes. Moving right along. That
is my wild squirrel moment for the day. I was focused on it. I just wanted to tell the story.
Of many, but David Bakhtiari held out of practice on Wednesday this week. A little more surprising, Randall Cobb.
Was that an injury or was that veteran time off? Oh, illness?
It said illness. So
there's stuff going around.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he'll be back.
Got the COVID. Who knows?
No, if he got COVID, you'd hear COVID protocol. So it's something else. Okay. There's other bugs going around. Return to school.
Yep, it's that time.
Biden said the pandemic's over, so it's just an illness. Anyway, I'm not done. Sorry.
Don't start her. Don't start her.
Kelly. Moving on.
Football.
Yes, I'm going to turn her mute button.
Okay, but I am disappointed.
No, wait.
Football.
No, it has nothing to do with COVID.
Does it have anything to do with football?
Yes, it has to do with Bakhtiari. The less you see him on the field, the more pessimistic I get. And I wonder if he's ever going to see another down of football again. I'm to that point of that bit of pessimism.
Well, they've already said that he's not going to practice every day, right? They've said that.
Is he ever going to practice? Is he ever going to play? That's the question I have.
According to the plan, he should practice tomorrow, and then he'll be out again on Friday. That's the way they're planning it. So let's see what happens tomorrow.
But this isn't normal. We're getting into a year and a half.
Well, no one said it was normal. I'm just telling you what the plan is.
I know, but the more he doesn't play, the more I question if he's ever going to play.
I know. Everyone will look at it the same way, not just you. I understand.
But I'll be surprised and excited if he actually does play down to football this year.
Well, if he does, I hope it's at a quality level. I think one thing that went around that disappointed me a little bit with Packer fans on Twitter last week, they had a little video clip of him at practice. Someone had filmed him, and he was just struggling to walk. I mean, a heavy limp. huge grimace on his face as he's just trying to walk. And, you know, for most Packer fans, I think it was just a heartbreaking thing to see because, A, we love David Bakhtiari. We want him to be well, but, you know, no one wants to see him in pain just trying to walk. And, of course, you know, there's the usual Packer trolls out there saying, like, oh, we should never assign him. We should cut him right now. Waste of space now. And I'm like,
they obviously don't know his contract.
Yeah. Well, that's true, too. So, but it's tough to see. And
especially
there's a little bit of negativity, a little bit of pessimism, because, you know, when you start seeing that a year and a half later, it really does cast some doubt on whether he's coming back.
And not to be a super negative Nelly, but when is it the Fisher cut bait moment for the Packers with him? How long do we go of the, okay, he's slowly developing, where you're getting lower and lower returns on that investment?
Well, it doesn't matter, because with the contract they have him on, that's going to dictate when they cut him.
We'll be paying for a corpse at this point with his contract.
Well, that's the first time.
Yep. But that's what's going to do. So he's going to be there, be a part of the team, and get paid a good chunk of money to do it. So he'll get paid to limp around if that's what it comes down to.
But if he doesn't play, does he get hoping in a different way? Because people really do look up to him, and he is a leader.
But I mean, if he's going to limp out and bring water out to the guys, I mean, that's going to take a long time to get him on and off the field. So I don't know if that's going to be the way you want him contributing.
It's just a sad situation all around. I like the guy, and it's depressing watching him struggle.
Yeah.
Yep. In a final bit of news, Kurt Benkert.
Yay!
Very popular backup quarterback was signed.
He's employed. I'm happy for him.
Not the 49ers.
Oh, the 49ers practice.
He's happy, so I'm happy. I know it hurts that he's not ours. And yes, he does carry the information on how to beat us, but I'm happy for him. He gets to.
I'm bitter.
He's a great guy.
He really is. And if you aren't following him on social media,
I'm bitter.
He's got the cutest kid in the world, and he really loves.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does. He's pretty cute. And he's happy with his life. And
he's the enemy now. The enemy.
But he's.
Stop liking him.
Oh, harsh.
That's an order. Stop liking him.
Dude, he's QB3. Whatever.
All right. So we're going to take that to the end of the fourth quarter.
Tell secrets.
Yes.
Yeah, he will tell secrets. That's why you get hired.
We're going to call this one a push. So 2-0-2 for the day. That's a win for us. And now we're going to get to this week's Packers game predictions.
Cheesehead Radio. Packers game predictions.
After a rebound home victory against the Bears, the Packers go on the road again, this time to our old NFC Central rivals, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Well, we're going back to the 80s.
Of course, everyone loves the two old guys going at each other. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady facing off, but Brady holds a 4-1 advantage head-to-head, so Rodgers isn't going to make up too much ground even with a win today. Interesting enough, Tampa Bay started out as 3.5-point favorites, but that quickly shrank. Essentially to being almost even on a neutral site, a 2-point spread now for the Bucs. Some injuries are factoring in here a little bit that are casting some doubt with the bettors. So already from 3.5 to 2. It's a late afternoon kickoff at Raymond James Stadium on Sunday. So Kelly, we'll start with you.
Okay, compared to last weekend, the Packers definitely face a tougher opponent this weekend. But I'm not going to turn down the momentum the Packers gained in their victory against Chicago. Yes, it's Tom Brady. But last time I checked, his poop stinks just like the rest of us. And he still makes mistakes on the field as well. The goal is to get under his skin and get him frustrated and tantruming. Seriously, that's a great strategy. Anyone that wants to take bets on how long it takes him to throw a tablet? I'm going to say second quarter. Well, they may be a stout opponent, but I think the Bucs are a team to be... And while the Bucs are a team to be reckoned with, I feel lucky and I think the Packers are going to squeak out a win. Packers 24, Bucs 21.
Well, this isn't the Bears, and this isn't Justin Fields, a quarterback. The 2-0 Bucks present a big challenge for a Packers team that does have momentum, but still showed some discomforting issues in Chicago, mostly in stopping the run. Now, the Bucks may be very interested in committing to the run game with Mike Evans, Julio Jones, and Chris Godwin all unlikely to play at wide receiver. But if the Bucks offense was at full strength, I actually would probably pick against the pack this week because, you know, it's what I do. But with so many outages among both their wide receivers and along their offensive line, I'm going to take the Packers to win this week. Not by a lot, but just enough to be uncomfortable on a final drive by Brady. I'm going to say Packers 27, Bucks 21.
Yes, the Bucks have injuries, but I'd much prefer they were on their defense instead of on their offense. Even without his star receivers, Tom Brady is capable of finding a way to score points. The Packers will be playing in the Florida heat and humidity in September, which has not been kind to them in the past. Finally, beating the Bears in a far-from-perfect fashion does not convince me they are ready for a team like the Bucks. I'm channeling Missouri this week, as they're going to have to show me first. Sadly, I'm picking the Bucks to win this one, 20-16.
When did you become a team?
I know. I rarely pick them to lose, but I feel obligated to do it this time for some reason.
How many people really know that Missouri is the show-me state?
I know. I certainly do. Hopefully, if they were paying attention in geography class.
True. This is true.
Then again, my father-in-law was from... Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio in our lucky 13th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com where you can listen to several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts can be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the pod, show us some love and leave us a review. You can also find us on Siri, Alexa, or Google just by saying, play Packers Talk Podcast. Finally, be sure to head over to our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find them across the street from Lambeau Field or on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. Brady versus Rogers, version 6.0. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Go if you have to win next week.
Maybe we should make a bigger font.
Oh, God, don't make it a bigger font. It makes it worse. Then it's like off the page. Stop.
Stop! I think that's much easier.
It is.
No,
yeah.
Because it's like two pages worth.
Look at how nice that is. It's all on one page.
No, but no, I have to scroll down on my page because of the size.
Oh, my God. I have to shrink the screen.
Oh, wait, it's smaller again.
Yes, you knucklehead. That was a moment of brilliance there.
Buttholes. Oh, my God.
Oh, that was a good one.
How big did you-